London Media Lounge Podcast. Once again, I'm here with my co-host, Mr. Steve Parker.
Hello.
And today we have an amazing guest, one of our great friends of London Media Lounge, Mr. Sachin Sharma.
You're saying it like Charmer. I like that. I'm gonna steal that.
Yeah, that's
Sharma the Charmer.
Sharma the Charmer, bro. He's
that's
got bars for that.
Lyrics. Yeah, dude.
Put some bars in while we're here.
Yes, sir.
I don't think you want that. We want to keep it PG-13 around here.
Yeah, there you go. We'll be. You see, our generation grew up on gangster rap. You feel me? We can only imitate that. That's all it is. But yeah, back to the Gregorian calendar and the construct of the daily, the weekdays, right? I feel like I do not follow them as well because I'm a 7 days a week type of person. Yeah, I feel like the way I take breaks from something is by doing something completely different. That's how I take a break. But sometimes when Friday comes in and I see a lot of people having plans for the weekend, and it kind of bothers me a little bit. A tiny bit. It's like, bro, like, why? It's like, what? Were you in prison or something? Were you in prison? Is that why you want to go out on a Friday and just, you know, escape and blast yourself or whatever? So that's in that sense, yeah, I agree with you. Like, the Gregorian calendar is a bit, I think, what do you think it was created? Yeah, anyone have an idea? Like, why do we have Mondays to Fridays and then we have the weekends?
I suppose someone came up with the plan that we should have 5 days on and 2 days off. But
yeah,
I suppose to your point about you don't follow the calendar, I suppose it helps if your friends around you and your circle of friends also don't follow the Monday to Friday routine. If your work colleagues or your parents do follow that plan, then it's a bit hard not to, isn't it? People you're interacting with. But if you don't, then that's cool. I mean, historically, you had that thing about Sunday night, didn't you? You were going to go to school on Monday morning and you had that feeling in your stomach, oh, no, it's school tomorrow.
Yeah.
I hate that. But if you've got no, you know, Monday, Tuesday doesn't matter to you, then it's good.
To me, I just designed a lifestyle so that every day feels like my birthday.
There you go. You I love that.
Every day.
That's what I don't. I open up presents every day from myself, little gifts. I don't do Valentine's Day, New Year's, Christmas, my birthday. All of that stuff is every day. So I don't really celebrate my birthday. It's just a continuation of whatever we're doing. But one thing I started doing was taking my mom out every year on my birthday, and that's been very nice.
On your birthday.
Oh, that is so beautiful.
It's her birthing day.
Yeah. She put in the work, you
exactly,
feel me?
Exactly. Maybe it's an immigrant thing, I don't know.
Yeah, it could be. But yeah, man, listen, pleasure to have you here. You're amazing energy. We've been working together for a month now, and you bring some positivity to the studio every time, and I just love working with you, man. So for the people that don't know, who is Sachin Sharma?
Oh man, we could be here for a while answering that question. But I'm a coach, a content creator, business owner, entrepreneur extraordinaire, as they call me. No one calls me that. I just like to say. But yeah, man, I've got my hands in various pies, and at the moment, those pies are life coaching, business coaching for entrepreneurs, teaching coaches how to build businesses without the general stuff that's involved. I do things very differently, as you know.
Working
on stuff that I find fun, like our YouTube channel, Life Coach Reacts.
Yes, sir.
Having a lot of fun with that. Podcast is called What I Learned This Week,
because
mm-hmm. I'm constantly learning things.
Amazing.
I make a lot of mistakes. That's why I'm learning so much.
Yeah.
You've seen how much I do, right? Like,
yeah.
In a week, I live like 5 weeks. It's crazy.
True that.
So, those are the things I got cooking right now.
Happy days. Back to that point where teaching coaches how to build a business without the mainstream ways. What do you mean by that?
So there's no niche. There's no target market. There's no ideal client avatar. There's no sales calls. There's no websites. It's just old school, build relationships, but I got my own like young person spin on it by using social media.
Right.
So, quick example is like, I met one of my clients and now one of my best friends, just cause of the way I create clients. Like I've messaged him on Instagram. I was like, hey, I love what you guys are doing. Can you tell me a bit more about it?
Mm-hmm.
And, take this off. And out of that comes relationship building. So
right.
It's not really about like I don't want to have loads of clients.
Yeah.
I value my free time above everything. That's the reason why my lifestyle supports my way of life. Like, if I coach 4 days a week, 5-6 hours a day, and 3 days a week off, those 3 days a week that I have off aren't, they're not off in the sense I'm just putting my feet up and relaxing, but mm-hmm. it's off coaching. So it's yes. not in the business, it's on the business.
Mm-hmm.
Those 3 days really support my rest, recovery, gym time, whatever.
And creativity.
Yeah, exactly. It's a big outlet for me. So when it comes to building a coaching business, I just want like 10 to 20 clients a year, mm-hmm. depending on how you want to live. And it's all done through just really slowing down the whole process. Like, I demonstrate what I do. I refuse to describe it. So if someone asks me, what's your coaching program? Like, I got no answer for you, Chief.
Yeah.
I don't want to give you an answer. I'm going to refuse to give you an answer. And instead, I'll just talk to you a little bit. Yeah. And if it sounds like I can help, I'm going to show you that I can. So you're not going to pay me for ideas. You're going to pay me for results that you've already received to continue.
Oh.
And that it's a really different way of building a business. And not a lot of people want to do it this way. And I totally get it. It's just my preference.
Yeah, I love it. I love it, though, because we do for, like, me and Steve, we've been thinking about this because we tried everything to get clients in here. And we've been at it since 2019, late 2019, early 2020. And one of the main things that we saw a theme in getting real clients in here, and is that you have to build a relationship. It's not, you know, there's no, you know, cold. I never got anyone through cold selling. I really had to be interested in the person for me to reach out and actually build a relationship, just like I did you.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm not interested in you and what you're doing, I can't, you know, I do not like to fake the funk. That's it. And it will be difficult for me to work with you.
It's about helping people, isn't it, as well? That's our sort of thing. Not selling so much, but thinking in your mind, right, how can I help this person? Which is our sort of mentality, I think.
Yeah, that's very important, man. That's very important. And yeah, just you go to sleep, you know, feeling better, and you're doing something positive. It's not just about the money. The money plays a big role, obviously. But, you know, just helping out people is really good. And I feel like that's what you do. Let me ask you about this, yeah? Coaches who have like 60 clients at one time. Talk to me about that. I know you got something to say about that, because I've seen it. I've noticed it. I'm like, okay, there's a correlation between the amount of clients that you have and the impact you're gonna, you know, bestow on them, if that's the correct vernacular there.
I think, so at one point I had 46 clients. So I'd
speak at one
from,
time?
Yeah, I speak from a place of experience when I talk about this stuff. I don't like to badmouth stuff ever, but like, you know, I've got somewhat experience to talk from. And when I had that many clients, I found that their commitment was minimal.
Mm-hmm.
My impact on them as a result is going to be minimal. Even if I'm bringing my best levels of coaching and energy to these conversations, there's not enough skin. I call it, look, there's a difference between skin in the game and soul in the game.
Right.
Skin in the game. All right. Yeah. Like, okay, you know, if you ripped your arm out of something that your skin, your arm's skin was stuck to, you can still pull it off.
Yeah.
And your arm will recover.
Right.
But if you've got soul in the game, you can't pull your soul out of it.
Yeah.
That's the difference between these levels of commitment.
So right.
When I had 46 clients, like, man, every week, guaranteed, I'd have some kind of issue. Sachin, it's not really working. I want to drop out. And I've, you know, I take pro bono clients, right? People who can't afford to pay for coaching, I'll take them on for free.
Mm.
So my idea back then was I'll take on people at different levels of payments. So we had a £50 offering. We had a £250 offering. We had a £1,000 a month offering. We had a 10 grand a year option. Loads of different options. And I had people at all these different places. And I found that my focus was so scattered, I didn't really have much time to do other stuff.
Yeah.
So it was all time in the business, very little time on the business.
Mm.
And that's one thing that I think was compromising my impact. So coming away from that way of working for the last 2 years almost, I've seen my impact just skyrocket. I had three sessions with this guy who's, I'm going to get emotional talking about this, but I had three sessions with this guy who hasn't left his house in 6 years. And I talked to his mom and him in a phone call one time. And she said, Sachin, I came home and I almost had a heart attack. And I said, why? And she goes, he put the bins out. He'd taken a walk and he'd been sorting out this room in their house, like putting clothes and stuff away. And she goes, he's never done housework. he was cleaning the dishes like when she walked in, and in 6 years he hasn't been really out of his room.
Wow.
Doesn't play video games, doesn't do drugs, he's not going out like doing stuff. He's just in his head.
Wow, that sounds terrible.
He's just got to a point in his life where he's got no focus or drive.
So he locked himself inside his brain.
You've managed to give him some focus and some point.
And the only way I was able to do that is because I spent good quality time with him, and I just helped him to alleviate the judgment that he's putting on himself. And I think that's something all of us can relate to,
yes,
right?
Yes, sir.
You know, like, you keep whipping yourself in your head for mistakes you've made in the past, and you make a meaning out of an event. Like, if I take my phone and put it over here, there's no meaning about that event. There's none. But then that means that there's no meaning behind any events. I could spill your drink. I could knock over something in here. It doesn't have to mean anything about me or anyone else. But what this person was doing was kept creating meanings about these events in their past that meant who they could be today and tomorrow. And, you know, that's stuff that I was missing earlier on when I had loads of clients. My focus was not, I don't know how to describe it. I couldn't go that deep with anyone because I was touching the surface on many things.
Right.
Now I have like between 10 and 15 clients on purpose.
Yeah.
I don't want to go over that. And I've noticed the difference. Like the results are game changing.
So that would you say that between 10 and 15 for an average coach, that would be the optimal number of clients that they would actually, you know, help them out?
Everyone's different.
Right. So everyone can take on as
some of my clients who are coaches, they'll work with like 10 people and that will be way too much for them.
Right.
Some of them, they'll work with 6 people, that'll be just right. And then myself, like, as you know, I've got a lot of energy. I love like being with people and helping out, or just being in conversation with people in a productive manner. Yeah. So 10 to 15 is a nice range where it's like kept my attention. I use the term keeps me out of trouble.
Yeah.
And it gives me like a nice structure for my week. So Monday to Thursday, I know I'm here. I know I'm going to be working. Out in the evenings, I'm not really doing much. I have an hour and a half break in between my calls. I can go up to and beyond 2 hours with each client if I need to. Mm-hmm. There's no time limits. I spend whole days with my clients, like 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. in London. I'll meet them.
Nice.
There's a lot that, and it's like a family, you know, like, and I don't mean it in a corny way. It's just like our relationship extends past the clock.
Right.
You know, like one of my clients called me on the day before her birthday and she was really upset about something. And I talked to her for like an hour. I just finished watching a movie in the cinema and I was driving home. I put the headphones on and I drove home, and then I just sat in the driveway for another half an hour and we were just talking. You know, that she didn't pay for the extra coaching time, but she's paid to have a relationship with me.
Your soul is in there. There you have it.
If you wind back a bit, I mean, how did you start becoming a coach? Were you the sort of person at school or when you were younger that people always used to come to and try and offload their problems with, or how did you actually get your first client?
Oh, yeah, this is funny, man.
The origin story.
My superhero origin story. So it's kind of like, I've been notoriously difficult to employ or keep in education. I got a lot of opinions.
I could imagine.
Yeah, man. I always had a tough time at school. I remember one of the teachers said to me, "You are going to have such a difficult time in the real world where your parents can't look after you."
Okay.
And I was like, "Hot damn, that's not fun to hear at a teenage age."
Yeah.
And then I found cannabis when I was in school, and I was like, "That's my ticket out of this. Just ride the wave, just enjoy my being high all day." And it doesn't really translate well to the working world, right?
Yeah.
You know, I used to get fired from jobs within 3 months. Every single time, every job I've had within 3 months, be fired. And I don't blame them. You know, I used to have a, you know, like an ego thing, like, oh, I'm too good to have a job. Not anymore. I have tremendous respect for anyone who can hold down a job, because I could never do it for more than 3 months.
Right.
There's a difference, right? Like, you choose your heart. Entrepreneurship's hard. Having a job is hard. Pick which one you want. It doesn't mean one is better than the other.
Yeah.
That's something I learned in the last like 4 years. But I finished university in 2014, and it took me 9 months to get a job, which I ended up getting fired from within 3 months. And the manager said to me, she goes, I did a degree in biology, right? And I got a job in a bank. So it's completely unrelated. Completely unrelated. And then
it happens.
The manager said to me, "Look, Sachin, you're the first one to leave. You're the last one here. and you always smell like weed. Why should we keep employing you?
Good and point. She's making good points.
I said, good question. Let me go and think about that. She's like, yeah, go think about that and come let me know on Monday.
Yeah, yeah.
Monday comes around and I was just like, I don't have an answer for you, chief. Yeah. I don't know what to tell you. I don't need to be here either.
Yeah. Stupid. I plead the fifth.
But she tried to convince me to stay. I got sexually harassed, which is a weird thing.
Oh, that's crazy.
It's happened to me a few times, man. It's not. I don't think it's because of the way I look.
I'm sorry, I'm laughing.
No, it's... You know what it is?
When it happens to a dude, it's so funny, right? But when it happens to a chick, it's like, whoa, this is how crazy society is, you know? Like, right. When it happens to you, bro, like, I'm laughing. Oh, shit, what? Did you cry? Like that. And then if a chick was here and she tells me, the guy sexually harassed me, I'll be so frustrated.
Yeah.
I'll be like, what? How dare he? Where is he? Give me his number. Like, you know what I mean? Bro, speak on that a little bit, bro.
Yeah, it's like, the societal double standards of men and women are very interesting to me too.
Yeah.
If a man pressures a woman for sex, he can go to prison for that. Mm. No one should be doing it to anyone.
Yeah. Yeah.
But like, most of my friends have been women throughout the last like 10 years. And a lot of them unfortunately tell me these stories.
Mm.
And when it happens to me, it's happened like, I'd say like 5-6 times in the last couple of years. I say it to the women as well. I'm like, yo, you know, I could go to prison if I was doing this to you.
Yeah.
Like if I exposed myself to you and started pushing my dick in your face and stuff like what you're doing to me.
Yeah.
You know, I could go to prison for that.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, and they kind of brush it off.
Yeah.
With the manager where I was working, it was like, I just felt really like dirty and just like, yo, this is not right. Because I purposely took myself out of dating for 3 years. I didn't have sex. I didn't want to meet women. I didn't want to talk to anyone because I needed to get my mind right.
Right.
And I didn't tell anyone that. I just was acting like it.
Mm-hmm.
And it made me feel like there's this saying, yeah, if you want something, you're going to be tested. And I really wanted to get my mind right and not touch any women for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And so that test presented itself. And the woman was attractive. It's not that I didn't want to. Yeah. It's just that, like, I said, no, leave me alone.
Yeah.
And I don't hit women. Yeah. I don't believe in that. If you're a man and you got a problem, yeah, if you got anger and all that, go to a fucking boxing gym and sort it out.
Yeah, exactly. Easy
or
one.
Or a mixed martial arts gym.
Go get choked out by a few black belts and stuff. Yeah. You know, gets the anger right out of you.
It does. It worked for me. But so, like, I don't believe in hitting, like, women and kids.
Yeah.
And then this woman, yeah, was, like, pushing my buttons. And I was like, so, like, that day, I talked to my brother. I said, look, this is what happened. And he laughed, but he didn't laugh at me.
Yeah.
He laughed and he said, why are you surprised? I'm like, huh? He goes, this is a very derogatory term. I don't use this outside of context.
Yeah.
But he said, that's the working dead. Like the walking dead are zombies.
Yeah.
He's like, the working dead, they're looking for distractions at work. Sex, gossip, gambling, drug use. It's all there.
Yeah.
Drug use, everyone laughs at me when I say this. Sugar, caffeine, nicotine, alcohol.
Yep.
That's the drug use of that. That's what I've seen there.
Yep.
And my brother really, like, he really indoctrinated me, really brainwashed me into understanding this, what his point of view was.
Mm-hmm.
I've come a long way from that. I've made my own opinions, but that incident really pushed me onto the path of entrepreneurship.
Right.
So in the conversation of how did I get started, that was the turning point for me.
Wow.
Because up until that point, I was abusing drugs. I was doing alcohol. I was smoking ganja all the time. Like, yeah. I didn't care.
Yeah.
That really taught me a lesson because I said to him, he goes, do you want to be their age and doing that? You know, have a family and be doing that kind of, do you want someone to do that to you?
Yeah.
I said, no. And he goes, well, you better sort your shit out because you're not right for the jobs thing. Go and sort your own thing out.
He's a wise man.
Yeah. I wouldn't, not a lot of men would have passed that test that was given to you by the universe, my friend.
I don't, you know, I look at it like I didn't,
you
have,
know what I'm saying?
I didn't have any answers. So I couldn't have passed it even if I couldn't have failed that, like I couldn't have gone against my wishes at the time because my body was just not into it. Like,
so the way you reacted to it was like your body just was in shock. Like,
yeah,
oh, what's
I was
happening?
Shocked, man. Yeah. And I'm lucky. Yeah, she didn't touch me or anything, but she was like, it was very like
very forward, and yeah, man. Was she like showing some stuff? Like, hey, check this out.
Nah, we were in the workplace, so.
I'm sorry, I keep really laughing. My bad.
I got laughed by now, it's fine. Much worse has happened to me in the past.
Listen, you're doing amazing right now, bro. So whatever happened in the past, whatever, they can, you know, like they can all, you know, catch a shuttle somewhere to Pluto or whatever, because right now you're doing amazing, brother. And you're such a positive guy. So not to be harsh and like not to sound insensitive, but you know, sometimes you gotta be like, I'm glad that shit happened to me and not any other person, because look at the positive twist that I put into the situation. And now you're a positive person. You know, if it happened to someone else, they could have become a destructive person, and they could have, you know, maybe just, you know, kind of transferred that same pain, that same trauma to another person.
I was doing that for a long time though.
Yeah?
Yeah, I was a very negative person for a long time. I was a very dysfunctional and destructive person. I wanted to hurt people, and yeah, I did. I've done a lot of things I'm not proud of, and I don't really talk about it that much, but I still have a lot of I have a long way to go to get. We were talking about Piccolo one day from Dragon Ball Z, right?
Yeah.
Do you know who that is?
I don't, but I've watched your podcast, so I'm getting an idea.
Yeah, so
I'll look it up later.
Do you want to explain who Piccolo is?
Piccolo is, so Dragon Ball Z is about like people saving the earth, right? Like there's always a new threat, random monster or whatever.
Yeah.
Piccolo is the first monster to come to the earth.
Yeah.
And he's from a planet of peaceful people, but he's a little shit. Excuse me. He's a little demon, you know, like right. he's angry about stuff.
Yeah.
And he just wants to destroy things. But the planet he comes from is really peaceful. And it's kind of like me. I come from a really good home. My parents are amazing. But I was out for like some kind of vendetta.
Yeah.
And it comes from the past, you know. Like when I was young, I was going through a really difficult time. From when I was like 5 until like 10, there was like really torturous stuff happening to me that shouldn't happen to kids.
Right.
And you know, I was taking it out on other people and myself, and I didn't realize I was doing that. Mm-hmm. I was trying to kill myself for like 5 years. I would just start trouble with people. I could laugh about it now, yeah, but like one time there was a drug dealer, and I said to him, yo, if you don't give me a discount on these drugs, I'm going to do and tell the police. And it's not, that's not stuff you should be doing to anyone.
Nah.
And I didn't give up. I didn't care, because like he was, he got upset about it, right? Getting in my face, like threatening me with sharp objects and whatnot. And I just didn't care. And I'm not saying it because I'm cool. This is really like
your mindset was all over the place.
It was only in one place. I don't care what happens to me.
Yeah. Jeez. Unless you're asking for a bulk discount. If you're buying in bulk.
I wasn't. No,
just checking.
You trying to incriminate him? What's that, bro? Chill.
I never sold drugs like as a serious thing, but I always considered it as a career. I've always known, like, if I don't do this entrepreneurial thing and I don't do the job thing, it's gonna be drugs.
Yeah.
And I don't look down at it. You know, like you got the, you know, Tesco sells alcohol. I'll be no different to Tesco. But I didn't look down at it as a
career. In terms of ethics and morality, you're spot on there, man. They keep, you know, they do sell us a lot of drugs that are... Look at McDonald's, man. Look at McD's. Like, I know you've done a video recently about that. And, you know, the sugar industry, the alcohol industry. Yeah, bro. They advertise it on TV, which is crazy. I was watching UFC yesterday. As you know, ladies and gentlemen, Immigrant Mentality Show, your host with the most. You feel me? Yeah. Hell yeah. Shameless plug, my friend. No, I was watching it, yeah. And bro, in the commercial break, fighters are promoting alcohol. And I'm like, dude, where's the correlation here, bro? You're an athlete. You're supposed to be staying away from all of that. You know, you say that is not something you should be promoting. Alcohol,
however,
really?
However, yes. Money.
Everyone's gotta eat, bro.
Everybody gotta eat, but I don't know, man. How much do you wanna eat? How much do you want to eat? I think we live in a society where we have to be above average to be like, yeah, I would not take that deal. You need to have a lot of money in the bank where you could be living like, I'm not saying live as a minimalist, but you can live healthy without having to, you know, transgress on those moralities and ethics. I don't know though. That's my opinion. When I'm an old man and see how it turned out, I'll let you know.
I think, yeah.
So tell us how you got your first coaching client. How did that happen?
Hold on. Before we go there, sorry, my apologies. You did not finish the point with Piccolo.
Oh yeah. So I was just on some destructive stuff right all the time, right? And then Piccolo comes around. He meets Goku, right? And he gets humbled because he's not strong enough to defeat him.
Yeah.
And what happens, that kind of happened to me a bunch of times. And then the last time it happened, I had a choice. Do I want to live or do I want to die? And I told the person, yeah, just kill me and I'll just, whatever. And the weaponry didn't work, let's say. So I got like another chance. And there's like seven times that I should have died. And I just didn't get the message. Every time, I didn't learn the lesson, did it?
Right.
And it kept getting worse until the last time I got the message. I was like, okay, I'm doing something wrong.
Yeah.
And I kind of feel like that's the same with Piccolo. He had a chance to change himself and he took it. And to me, it was like, okay, my seventh chance was like the one that I took.
Yeah.
So, you know, with Piccolo, it's like it's a redemption arc. And it's kind of the same with me. It's like I was a very dysfunctional and destructive person. And then I went on my redemption arc, but not through other people, just through me.
Mm.
So it relates to how I got my first client. It's like I wasn't like this. I wasn't a spiritual person, but I always knew there was more than meets the eye.
Yeah.
Transformers reference. I always knew that there was something more for me. I've always felt like I'm destined for greatness, and that's my own definition of greatness, not like a objective thing. It's just mine subjective. So after I quit the bank job, I cut off all of my friends and family except for my parents and my brother, and I just pressed the reset button on my life, and I really was determined to find out what was wrong with me. And I went to therapy, I went to counseling, I went private, I went free, I did a group therapy, I did a paid group therapy, I did loads of things, and it didn't really help. It felt like I was going there to complain. And after a while, I just kind of gave up on helping, like getting help from the outside world. And I went onto YouTube and I adopted mentors. So Gary Vee, Elliot Hulse, Ralph Smart, JP Sears, Lewis Howes, Aubrey Marcus, Joe Rogan a little bit. Just people who are dedicated to putting out content that can be helpful. And I just expanded my mind and I started doing my own research. So people, when I went to therapy and stuff, they were like, oh, you got PTSD, you got this trauma, you got that, you got this. Just threw a bunch of labels at me. And I didn't really appreciate it. I felt like, oh, I've come here to get help and now I just feel like more stuff is wrong with me. So I took it to the internet. Okay, how do I cure these things? Because they were telling me, you can't cure it, you can just manage it. I don't believe in that. I believe whatever you believe to be true will create your reality. Mm. So if I believe I'll never get stronger than whatever, then it's not going to happen. If I believe I'll never make more than a certain amount of money, not going to happen. It's like Rome, the belief that it could be done is what started the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
So every great thing that's ever been achieved starts with the belief it could be done. I believe that. I believe this stuff doesn't have to be set in stone. So I went out, trying to find cures, didn't really find much in the way of curing, but the things they were suggesting were helpful. I could see myself improving. And then I stopped drinking alcohol, I stopped smoking, and I just stopped spending time with other people. And I got a dog, and I just went into nature every day. I started journaling, meditating, doing yoga. These are all what I call doing solutions, but there were being shifts. The way I was being was shifting a lot. So a lot of the anger, a lot of the self-pity and the like being annoyed at the world was starting to fall away as I took more and more responsibility. Mm. And I believe in this term is called extreme ownership. So anything that happens, I just look at how can I take ownership for this? It doesn't matter if it's the other person's fault. What part to play did I have in that? And then all of this work was really helping me. So I started posting once a day on Tumblr, 200 to 300 words just describing what I'd learned today. And then people were asking me, like maybe like once or twice a month, I'd get an interaction, like a like or a comment or a follow or something. No one was really paying attention. Then one person asked me, are you a life coach? And I didn't even know what it was. I was like, what the hell are you talking about? The only coaching I've heard of is sports at that time. So I looked into it and there was a course and it was quite a lot of money. But back then you could do the financing. So it was spread out over 5 years. So right. I was paying like a tiny amount of money every month. It just finished paying it off recently, actually. and for 5 years. So then I did the course. And as part of the course, you're supposed to do 40 hours of practice before you finish the course. Mate, I coached 100 people for free in 6 months. I just went for it because it felt good the first time I did it. I was like, yeah, cool. So then the next year, 2018, I started taking it more seriously and I wanted to grow a business. And my first coaching client who ever paid me like a significant amount of money, not $25, $50, it was like £3,000. And I still remember like my hands were shaking and I was looking at the PayPal thing and I dropped my phone on the floor and I just started crying in it because it was like, this is the first sign that I've got that this can work.
Yeah, that's quite a journey right there, man.
And he came to you because of those posts on Tumblr that he'd seen, or how did he find you?
So I made this series of videos on my YouTube channel. It's called How to Leave the Matrix.
Let's go. Shout out to video, man. London Media Live. Plug right there. Sorry. Go on.
She found my videos.
Oh, she?
Yeah. She found the videos on YouTube and she's like, the way you talk about this stuff, it's like you're talking to me. Mm. It's like you're giving, it's like you're trying to wake me up from living in my matrix. And that's the thing. Like, I didn't want those videos to be about leave the physical world behind because it's important. Your inner world and the outer world, they support each other. Mm-hmm. So she was like, that was the main concept that made me want to work with you. Can you tell me how you do this? And we spent a couple hours together, I coached her, and she was like, I'm definitely want to do this. Let's go. So we split up the payment into a couple of manageable pieces for her and we just started coaching.
Awesome stuff. You know what? Yeah. My apologies for that shameless plug, but let me tell you something that I absolutely believe in, and I bet you two will agree with me as well. You know, I feel like every single coach has a certain type of clients out there, but I can't remember who we spoke to about this, but like a coach character type can only help certain character types out there, right? It kind of like you can speak to them, they can get you. Right? Am I on the right track? Let me explain how I'm looking at this. Yeah, if you put yourself out there through video, through YouTube channels, through Instagram, LinkedIn, pop the videos, show your energy, how you look at the world, give them a little snippet of yourself. The client will find you because you're gonna, just that little small video is gonna impact them. Like, oh shit, this guy is really, you know, he's onto something. You know, I could really chat to him about this and that and stuff like that. Would you agree with that?
Yes and no.
Go on.
In my experience, which is the only thing I'm an expert on, I've put out videos. There's almost 700 videos on the YouTube channel. I've put a lot of them on private. But when I was first posting this stuff, I didn't get people contacting me. So I combined it with outreach. This is a very spiritual thing to me. It's not I'm looking for clients. It's like the world we live in is very disconnected. Mm. We're holed up in buildings. We're living in apartments and all that. I live in a house too. I'm not trying to live in the wilderness. Yeah. I'm not there yet. Maybe one day.
Log cabin.
Yeah. In a tent somewhere, bro.
Might find me on some Osho flex, you know, like with a cult and I'm just walking around.
In a robe.
Maybe. I did that in Mexico for a while.
No way. Did you sacrifice a goat or something?
Nah, I'm not into hurting animals, but.
We'll get to Mexico in a bit.
All right. So, with the outreach thing, it's like, I am going out to the world to create connections with the planet in a time where we're all disconnected from each other and from, you know, you walk down the street, right? How many people have said hi to you when you're walking down the street?
None. Mm. Zero.
Not in this area. If you go further north and some like more tourist areas, people tend to say hello to you more, I think.
Yeah.
Even
Brighton. I went to Brighton recently and a lot of people were smiling and saying hi to me.
Just walking their dogs. Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a dog walker thing, I don't know, but I started doing it a lot more.
Yeah.
And there's outreach in the real world and there's outreach in your phone world. So in my phone world, I'm on Instagram. Okay, I've just posted a video. One of the hashtags might be mindset shift.
Okay? Right.
So I'll click on that and I go look at the most recent post. Who else is posting in mindset shift? Yeah, there's probably a bunch of other coaches. At the time, I wasn't really interested in coaching coaches. That's a funny story as well. The only reason I got into it, because when I hired my first business coach, he said, how many proposals did you make this month? I flicked through my diary. I said, 46. He nearly fell off his chair. He goes, Sachin, most people make 46 proposals in a year. What are you doing? I said, I'm on Instagram. And I showed him what I was doing. He goes, can you teach this to other coaches? I was like, I don't want to do that. He said, why? And it was just like, I didn't want to be seen a certain way. I didn't want to look at like, oh, I couldn't have a life coaching business, so I just started coaching coaches because our industry is quite incestuous like that.
Yeah.
And he said to me, this is sick. Yeah. He goes, do they need your help? I'm like, It looks like it looks that way, yeah, because a lot of coaches can't find any potential clients.
Yeah.
I said, okay, yes, they could probably use my help. He said, can you help them? I said, yeah, probably. I'd teach people this stuff. He said, so what's your problem? And I was like, this chip on my shoulder, that's my problem.
It feels kind of salesy in a way, doesn't it? Perhaps it feels like you're selling more than maybe you should be. I don't know.
Well, when it comes to coaching coaches?
Doing that sort of Instagram thing and teaching that method.
Yeah, man. Well, like, shameless plug on my part now. I've made an online course. Mm. So it's split up into two sections. The first part is like teaching people how to do this thing, and the second part is creating clients. But I don't want to have it out there like for everyone to buy. I want it to be like, oh, hey, Jonathan, I talked to you for a couple hours. I think the course will be helpful for you. Here's a discount code. Like, crack on. I think it'll be good for you. Mm-hmm. You get two coaching calls as well with me. It's a very like personal thing, because I want to make sure it doesn't become that. I want to make sure it doesn't become like I'm trying to sell to everyone. It's got to be right for them. It's got to be like, it's the same thing with coaching. Like, I don't want everyone to be my client.
Yeah.
Two coaching calls with every course sold. Do you know how busy I'm going to be?
Yeah,
I like free time, bro.
Yeah.
I got dogs.
That's real right there. You see that? That is real. I love that.
There's a difference, isn't there, between a business coach and a life coach. I guess you're calling yourself a life coach, it sounds like. Would people have two coaches in some instances? Would they have a business coach and a life coach?
I have four right now.
You've got four coaches.
Yeah, so I have one life coach. I see it, well, so this is kind of like what I do. I'm your life coach first and your business coach as well. So it's 1A, 1B. The 1B comes after, because you can't build a business if your personal life is a mess.
Yes.
I don't believe in that.
Yes.
So 1A, 1B is what I've got with my coach. Shout out to you, Ankush. Great guy.
Let's go.
And then I've got coaches who I've hired as mentors. So shout out Johnny Saporno.
Let's go.
Instead of Soprano, he calls himself Johnny Saporno.
Is it?
Because he works in the adult films industry.
Did he really? Like, holy shit, what was he doing?
Oh, mate, you're gonna have to talk to him.
I need to bring him over,
you
man.
Keep it PG.
behind the camera, surely.
Yeah.
Oh, mate, he's done all kinds of things.
Oh shit, because it's such a huge industry. I really want to chat to him about
He's an incredible guy. He's taught me so much about healing my relationship with me to have better relationships with women. And to free women from the bullshit, the stuff that men have been putting them under for centuries.
Yeah.
You know, like putting the fear of God and shame into them. So much to the point where other women have like shamed each other for doing stuff. And now women, have you heard this saying, like, women don't dress for other men, they dress for other women.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, like stuff like that. He's taught me a lot of these things to take my stuff out of it when I speak to women. So it's not an adversarial relationship. I'm trying to get something from you. Now it's we're on the same team.
Mm.
And that's great. So Johnny helped me a lot with that. Chip Chipman, he's like 70, he lives in Canada, I think. He's been teaching me a lot about slowing down, teaching me more about like getting in touch with the nirvana that exists in all of us.
Mm.
And then Keith Blevins, he's a psychologist. He's been helping people with mental illness with this way of thinking, you know, like whatever goes through your head, it's not you. It doesn't require action. It's just thought, and thought is different to you. And learning that distinction has just helped me massively with so many things. So life coaching is business coaching. Business coaching is life coaching. They support each other. And that's what I like to do. It's a holistic thing. If one of my clients says, I need more money, I'm not going to go into that. I'm not going to start teaching you about, all right, well, these are the things that we can start doing. I'm going to ask you why. What's the goal behind the goal behind the goal behind the goal? One of my clients goes, I want to spend more time with my family. I was like, well, you don't need to make $1 million to do that. You know, why don't you start doing that first? Design your life around that. And then the money you make will support that more.
Yeah.
That's how I like to approach it. It's like a whole holistic approach.
That makes more sense, doesn't it?
It does. Yeah. I like it. I like you've got four coaches. That sounds interesting.
<They're> fucking exhausting.
How do you have time to coach anybody else?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. So I speak to my uncle. She's my main coach. So I speak to him every week, once a week. And my other coaches, it will be like, oh, yeah, Johnny, I want to talk to you about something specific. It's like kitchen utensils, right? Frying pan is like, you're going to use a frying pan most of the time in the kitchen, right?
Yeah.
But then the spatula, you don't always use a spatula. wooden spoon. You don't always use the wooden spoon. Food processor, the blender. Right. These are all the different coaches that, and I say that to my clients too. Like, use me as a specific thing.
Yeah. And there's that really annoying masher in the drawer that the drawer gets stuck.
you can't pull it out. Yeah, yeah, that happens. That happens quite often. And I have fat fingers. There's no way I'm going under the thing and trying to release it.
No, you get all cut up. Yeah,
yeah, man. But that's what it is, man. Bro, it's a breath of fresh air, man, to hear you speak for real. Because there's you can feel the you can't be a coach and not have coaches. There's that, and there you go. A coach who has four coaches.
I sort of hear it as like the coaches are like a petrol pump for you. They're filling you up with kind of, not knowledge as such, but kind of recharging you to then you can pass that on to your, what are they called, coachees or
students,
people that you clients. yeah. There should be a word for it.
Disciples.
I hear what you're saying. The thing with me is like, I believe in this thing. It's like you can't take other people to where you haven't been. So if you ask me, can you give me directions to this place that's not on Google Maps for whatever reason, I can't take you there if I haven't been there. Mm. You know, like, so it's like I used to have this big thing about money. I can't make a certain amount of money. I've always been bad with money. And then, you know, I worked with coaches on that. And now I can help people make money because I've done it already and I can continue to do it. So I can take people to that place. Yeah. It's like people who have really deep rooted traumas, deep seated beliefs about themselves. I'm doing the work still. I don't know if it's ever going to stop. I'm not sure yet.
Yeah.
But I've been doing it so I can take other people to those places.
I'm sort of seeing it now more because in previous to chatting to you, I might say to you, well, you're quite young. You've only had a few years in industry. How can you be a business coach? But you're saying it's not about teaching you how to use Excel spreadsheets or profit and loss or cash flow forecasts. It's getting the emotional side of you sorted out to make that possible to then be a good business person.
Yeah, and I think there's a powerful distinction to make here. Yeah, so I said this on my dad's pod. Me and my dad started a podcast together.
Yeah,
I said this. It's like I've had people ask me, can you business coach me on something that I have zero experience in? And I'll tell them, look, what we'll do together is business coaching because we're gonna, that's the outcome that we want. But I'm not gonna mentor you. I've never done that thing. So if you're gonna come to me and say, how do I do this specific thing, I can't give you that. And I tell them that from the outset, yeah, because I'm not trying to cheat people out of money. But exactly what you just said, I don't have those experiences. I've only been coaching for 5 years. And I say only, I've done thousands of hours of coaching experience in that time. But it's very important that people understand if you're going to get business coaching from me, it's going to be on who you're being in the world and what that creates as a result. So let's say like who you're being is very scarcity driven. You're not going to be successful in your business. Yeah. But if we shift that, oh, okay, I'm only scarcity driven because I'm competing with David or Thomas just started this thing and I'm trying to compete. Well, we're going to change those beliefs. We're going to create being shifts so that you can come from a place of abundance and you might support our work with a mentor or with an online course or with something else. Right. It's not going to be like, I can't give you what I don't have.
Mm. Love that.
We spoke about before with somebody else on this podcast about the difference between a psychologist and a coach. And I'm sure you have sort of some kind of training when someone comes to you and you can say to yourself, I can spot symptoms of mental illness, or there's things that I definitely can't coach you because you need to see a specialist first. Have you had that sort of thing going on where you've seen someone that's, you know, ill, that's got to be cured first before you can then coach them?
It really depends what they're coming to me for. So if someone's got crippling anxiety and they say they want to build a business, I'll be like, look, we'll work on your anxiety first. We'll do the business thing later. Do this first. Now, if this like, I had a case where someone's, their traumas are, I used to believe in the term illness, right? I used to, but now I just see it as misunderstanding. So this person said to me, I have had these traumas in my life for 20 years. I can't move forward in my life because of them. So I can see immediately all you've done is make a meaning out of what tomorrow can bring because of yesterday. And we just simplify it. So you're not actually ill. You just got a misunderstanding in your mind. Now, other people might call it illness. I don't know, but I don't like to put that on other people. But in relation to what you said, there are cases where I'll say, I don't think I'm right for you. Talk to my colleague. She's a specialist in this. And I make like 10 referrals a month. Mostly because I talk to so many people. Mm-hmm. It's the same with business. I met someone recently who wanted to start a modeling agency. Never done it. I'm interested in the person. I was like, yeah, we could have some really good conversations. I could help you a lot. But for what you want specifically, talk to this person. Mm. So I'm in, I have a good referral network and people love me because
you send them a lot of business.
Yeah, man. Like someone told me I've made about 30 grand over the last couple of years because of you. And to me, I don't ask for referral fees. I don't really, I don't think I'd, maybe like 3 or 4 times people have surprised me with stuff and be like, oh, hey, here's some money, or like, here's a nice gift for you, or yeah. reciprocated the favor. But I just, I don't want to be that guy who has the ego about I can help everyone. Because I think that can be really destructive.
Wow, you are at that level. That's something that I don't think I can understand that, to have that ego of like, yes, I can help everyone here. Let me help myself first. I'm at that level. I'm still over here. But let's speak, let me ask you a question, because we're coming up to an hour and I do not want to take a lot of your time. Just to make it about me a little bit, yeah? So what type of advice would you give someone that's, I have a problem, yeah? So my problem is I'm doing too many things and I have that fear that I'm half-assing everything that I'm doing. Well, how do you move forward with that thought process? Obviously, I have also that mentality, this is what I'm doing, I don't care, I'm going to keep showing up and I love what I do. Yeah, I love what I do. So there's no issue there. But I do feel like I'm doing too many different things and I might be half-assing it. Is that a negative thought that's lurking, or is that, how would you look at that?
Well, there's no such thing as negative thoughts.
Right. Tell me more.
Let's start with that.
Yeah, please elaborate.
Okay, so if do you have any thoughts about this bottle top?
Nah, it looks cold.
See? Yeah, there's no mental thoughts, it's just a physical thought. Yeah, I agree, it's cold and wet.
Yeah.
Would you describe any of those thoughts that you're having about it as positive or negative?
No, it's just, it's the way it is.
Yeah, zero, neutral.
Well, ladies and gents, that is all thought, but subjective opinion makes the thought positive or negative. So in the movie Joker that came out, I think it was like a couple years ago, 1 year ago, he has that part where he goes to the caseworker, all I have is negative thoughts.
Yeah.
And there's a meme about it, and I just crossed out the word negative, all I have is thoughts.
Yeah.
It's coming through you. There's no such thing as negative thinking. It just is only your subjective opinion.
Okay.
So with that being said, are you happy doing things the way you're doing?
Hell yeah.
Then there's nothing to solve.
There you go.
There's only something to work on if you want to work on it. I don't want to come around with the stick poking people. Yeah. Hey, do this properly. This is the right way. This is the spiritual way. Mm. It's silly. The spiritual textbook is kind of helpful sometimes, but it's a textbook. You got to go and apply it to life.
Yes, behavior, man. Coming from a spiritual background, you know, just saying what you just said there. They were describing the prophet. You know, Prophet Muhammad, they were describing him and they were like, he did not just come with the scripture. He was like, he was the living embodiment of that scripture. The way he was handling people, the way he was chatting to people and everything, just everything about him was like, he was the embodiment of the scripture. So people talk about the scripture and not applying it. It's like, well, what are you talking about, dog? You know, you're using it for political gain and stuff like that. But that's a different topic for a different podcast. You know, let's not go there. But man, listen, amazing. You have an amazing energy. One of the things that I love about you, dog, is like, I relate to you in many different ways. And one of which is like, I fucking love anime, movies, games and shit like that. And I love the fact that you, a serious serious professional, you know, you're on the league of your own. Let's put it there. But you, a person who can make a living, who's very positive and kind of like from a point of view of an average person, is like, you're doing well for yourself. You're doing amazing stuff for yourself. And to see you bring inspiration from anime, from Mortal Kombat, from like movies and stuff like that, is incredible to me. How did you find the confidence? This is coming from a person, bro. I grew up in Algeria, North Africa. I was ashamed that, you know, a group of us were ashamed to say like, we watch anime, we watch Dragon Ball Z. You know, people used to bully us and make fun of us. You know, not a lot, because a lot of my friends were athletes, and we beat the shit out of everybody. Don't mess around. But I'm just saying, like, for me, I took it further. They grew out of it. That's what I'm getting at. They grew out of it. I didn't. Dragon Ball was out. People kind of like grew up. I got into Naruto. I got into Bleach. I got into One Piece, and I was still super in love with that. Motivated, inspired, just kept me going. Where did you find the confidence to actually use it in your coaching?
I think not believing in confidence really helps.
There you go. You see, the way he thinks is different, man. Tell me more about this not thinking about confidence.
It's not a real thing.
Right?
It's being made up, just like following your passion. It's just sick marketing. It's like, if you get someone to believe in something, then they'll buy products associated with it. It's like, I haven't used deodorant in 7 years. I just use lemons. And like, you know, if you look at deodorant commercials, what they're trying to do, give you, oh, you got the idea. If you got, you know, you put this thing on your body, spray these harsh chemicals over you, which you shouldn't get in your eyes or your mouth, or any orifice, it's dangerous, but put it on your armpit, which could leak into your body and does, and then you'll get women. It's like, well, I don't it's silly, isn't it? It's a bit crazy, but you know, there's a whole industry built on motivation, which isn't a real thing either. Confidence, motivation.
True, motivation comes for like 5 seconds and then it's gone.
You don't need motivation to brush your teeth. And this is coming from someone who, when I was going through severe depression, I didn't brush my teeth for 3 weeks and I didn't shower for 2 weeks.
Oh,
and you know, I know it's disgusting. We can laugh about it now.
Yeah.
And I met this girl and I really didn't want to talk to her because I stank, right? And I had a big coat on, so she couldn't smell me, and I just didn't talk to her, so she couldn't smell my breath. I went into my room and brushed those teeth like it was going out of style. I brushed them as if I was going to lose them tomorrow.
Yeah.
And then I went and talked to her because motivation, it was an idea. I just decided it was true.
Do you think that situation pushed you?
I love women, so I mean, I'm a man who I really enjoy being around women because I think it's a great thing for all of us.
Yeah.
So that situation when I met her, she asked me after we started dating. She was like, when you first met me, did you not like me? I was like, I was so motivated by meeting you that I brushed my teeth, cleaned my apartment, and sorted out all of us.
Yeah, that's what I'm getting at. I do feel like it just from personal experience is that situations changed me. There was not enough motivational speakers, not enough lessons learned and stuff like that changed me. It was a change of situation and circumstance that pushed me into a corner and kind of like pushed me to make that decision. What am I doing? Am I, you know, quitting, backing up, pussying out, or I'm going to step up to this plate and I'm actually going to do this and do that and do that. And I'm going to, you know, and the change will come with it because you change your situation.
Yeah, I also think change, like it all originates from inside us. So
right.
This is another thing, like people are waiting for the perfect conditions. Relating it back to the anime thing you asked me, one time, I was talking with someone about something that was really deeply hurting them. And I couldn't stop thinking about Naruto, the anime.
Right.
I couldn't get it off my head, but this person knows nothing about it. They're like twice my age, not interested in cartoons, and definitely not interested in anime. Like to them, that's what their kids watch.
Mm-hmm.
And they hired me as a coach. And I just went for it. I was like, look, I'm going to tell you a long story about this fucking anime, about this anime that spans over 14,000 minutes of television.
Yes.
I can't tell you the whole story, but let me tell you this segment of it. And after I finished talking to him about it, I was like, look, I've just talked to him for a long time. It's about 20 minutes that I just went on and on and on. And I said, can you tell me what you're hearing based on what I've just said? And they were crying. And
wow.
I said, what you've said has touched me in such a different, but I never expected. And they said, I'm going to start watching the anime.
What part of the anime did you
see? So it's Itachi and Sasuke's story.
So two brothers. Oh my God.
It's funny because I'm the sort of the tech guy. So if anybody ever asks me any film references, game references, book reference, I'm like, nod and sort of smile and wave sort of thing. Because I can watch a film. I can go into a cinema and watch a film. And I think it's because of the way I learn. I'm very kinesthetic. So right. I have to touch things or make things or go somewhere for it to sink in. If I watch a film, same at school, I could watch a blackboard or a teacher writing, it just doesn't go in. So remembering things like these references from anime and films is just, it doesn't sink in. But now you tell it as a story, and we're sitting around a campfire and we, you know, emotions kind of kick in, that then goes in, I think, which is interesting. Yeah.
And especially if the story is related to you personally. So like this thing with Itachi and Sasuke, Itachi's the older brother, Sasuke's the younger brother. I have an older brother. This person had an older brother. And I talked to him about the dynamic of the relationship and why their older brother was torturing them. If any of, do you have an older sibling?
No, I'm the oldest.
Have you ever tortured your younger siblings?
Lots, yeah, every day.
So like in your mind, you know why you're doing it.
Yeah.
In our minds, we don't. Yeah. And then we create stories and stuff. And then this person, I took them super deep into the story and I took them from the beginning to the end. And I, you know, talked to them about the how they reconciled their relationship. And they just couldn't stop crying. Mm. And you know, their sibling was going through a hard time. And they said, you know, if they were in one of the older sibling's shoes and they were going to die and whatever, what would I say to them? And yeah, we could have jumped to that straight away from the beginning. I was like, well, what would you do if your sibling was going to die? Mm. But taking them there through the story, they see themselves in their shoes and they can feel what that person's going through. It's like if I tell you the story about, okay, Mortal Kombat, like there's people dying, that the world is in peril. We can't really relate, you know, like the world's not under invasion that I know of.
Yeah.
So it's more difficult to relate to that. But with these like very human stories out of anime, they're set in fantastical worlds where, you know, stuff that ninjutsu, you know, like you can't throw a fireball out of your hand. It's hard to relate to. But if we take it, the essence of it is about human connection. Same with Mortal Kombat. I could tell you about a couple of these characters who are fighting to save the world. You're not doing that. I'm not doing that. But in our own way, we are.
Mm.
And then we can relate it to ourselves. And it just becomes like, I believe we're all living in a movie of our own creation. You're the star, the director, the producer, everything of yours, my. We're all directing and living in our own movies. And I refuse to be an extra. I refuse to take a back seat and be like, well, you know, Hollywood might not like that. Let me not do that. That's the reason why I coach the way I do. I swear. I call my clients bro. I call my clients sometimes when I'm like, I did a coaching session when I was on acid at the top of a mountain.
Jeez.
And smoking a joint.
Jeez.
And it wasn't like a paid coaching agreement session. So it wasn't like I'm disrespecting their time. I just said to them, look, I'm going to be on the mountain this day. If you want, you can call me. It won't, like, it's outside of session time. But, you know, you need a bit of extra help this week. Cool, just call me. And we talked through a bunch of things and it was really helpful for them. And I told them, look, if you want to know, yeah, this is what I'm doing today. I'm just walking up the mountain. I took acid about half an hour ago. So it's going to start kicking in. By the time I get to the top, I'll be in it. But that stuff's not really important to my client. They didn't care about that. It was just like the coaching bangs, Sachin. I'm in it.
That's
and so I don't want to be that guy. I don't want to be the psychedelics coach. Like Sachin's always going to be on acid when he coaches you. I'm not. This is just it was a phase.
It was a part of your week, whatever.
Exploration.
And how, so tell me about this illusion of confidence.
What do you want to know about it?
Like, all right, so here's one. I am going in a trajectory with my university career where, all right, recently I was in the embassy and I was invited because they were impressed with the presentation I'd done for them. I do research on energy economics and it concerns a lot of my home country, Algeria. I went up there for a completely different reason. But since I was there, a lot of the guys in there that attended the presentation pulled me to the side. They're like, yo, listen, we sent the presentation back home, blah, blah, blah. And they saw you. They're very proud of you, blah, blah, blah. We're going to call you and shit. And I'm sitting there like, what the fuck? That's not... You know, I don't know. I did not want to be presenting in front of a group of people with suits and shit. And I don't know, like, is that a confidence issue? Like, do you think that's a confidence problem? Because I could do it, but it's just my mind of like, I have to do it right. Mm. I have to be perfect. You know, I cannot have nobody challenge me. You know, I need to be cover every single point to the point that I keep them at awe and I'll be like, good luck.
Well, maybe what would put them in awe is you not having it perfect and encouraging a dialogue of, hey, look, I don't have all the answers, but what do you guys think? And we co-create the space together where more change would take place.
Mm.
That's not a confidence thing. It's just you got one idea of how it could go. You could explore a bunch of other ideas of how it could go. This is one of the other things I love doing as a coach is if you feel like you've got one or two options, you have a conversation with me, now you got a million.
So you just let go of the control, right? So in what sense is that? Because confidence is an illusion. All right, confidence with women. Let's put it that way. Like, I think this, I'm speaking for most guys in here. Sometimes a beautiful woman, successful, all of that, funny. Sometimes it's like you can chill with her, but to ask her out, to be like, yeah, you know, let's go out, your mind type shit. We're going into a relationship. I'm after that, you know. That's you need confidence to do that, right? So that sort of confidence. Why? So is that an illusion as well?
I think it's outdated thinking.
Right.
It's like, and this is the way I see it, right? So after the dawn of the last ice age, agriculture started to come about, right? Like plants, you could put plants in the ground and harvest them for food. So men decided, okay, like I can have children to work the farms, and I want to make sure those children are mine, because when I die, I can give them this stuff. And the concept of ownership came about. Women, like everyone, don't want to be controlled.
Right.
So men had to try and find creative ways to control them, to stop them from sleeping with other men so that their children remained theirs. I know, don't worry, we're getting there. So they started to put the fear of God into them. They started to put fear of judgment into them. There's a lot of stuff that's made men and women's relationships with each other adversarial. Okay, I want, like, for me, it was, I want this from you. How do I get it? And I used to think that women were very different to men. They're not. We're all horny at some points.
Yeah, hell yeah. No, that's a...
I heard this funny thing.
That's public information.
I heard this funny thing. If men think about sex every 10 seconds, women think about it every 3 seconds.
Yeah.
Women are, in my experience, women are more horny than men.
Yes.
And that's just talking about sex. Now, in terms of relationships, I look, it's very, very similar with, if I say to someone, hey, I like you. I'm not sure why. I just met you, but I like you. I want to see why that is. Should we go and get some dinner? Or you want to come back to my place and smoke some ganja and watch Rick and Morty? Like, mate, I don't know.
My type of date.
I don't know if that sounds like fun to you. Do you want to do that?
Oh, shit.
Just giving people the freedom of choice. It's like, yeah. You guys asked me, hey, Sachin, we got this recording studio. Do you want to come here and record? You didn't try and shove it on me, and you weren't coy about it. Like, oh, maybe he'll be a client.
Oh, yeah.
You weren't shy. You just were like, hey, we've got this great space here. Do you want to come?
Let's come and help. We can help you, I think.
Yeah, that's it. Hey, man, come try it out.
So it's the same.
Can you imagine the way you just put it out?
It's the same with women. Like, I just I asked one of my friends one time. She wasn't a friend at the time. No, we're good friends. And when we met, I said, look, the way you look in that dress is making me want to smack your ass. Do you mind? And she was like, do I mind what? I said, do you mind if I lift you up and smack you on the ass? She was like, yeah, I do mind. I was like, okay, do you mind in public or private? She's like, I'd mind in public, but not in private.
Oh, there you go.
Because like women are testing us just like the way we're testing them. It's like a little, you know, it's a to and fro, it's a dance, it's a push pull of energy. It's like sex. It's not all one way.
Yeah.
So I like to look at it as like there's no confidence required to tell people what you want, because when you go to a restaurant, there's no confidence required to order the salad or the steak. Mm. There's no confidence required to tell, you know, the TV which numbers you want to punch in for which channel. There's no confidence required to tell YouTube what you want to look at today. There's too much thought going into it. The only thinking that ruins relationships, in my opinion, is selfish thinking. And it's not chosen. You don't choose what goes through your head. You know, this is the thing that liberated me massively. For the last 6-7 years, I haven't really met that many women. This year, when I went to Mexico, that all changed. Like, mm-hmm. I purposely went out wanting to meet more women because I'm just like, I love women. It's been a great time. You know, I wanted to explore sexually and other things. It was really fun. The only thing that I saw was getting in my way is what's going through my head in the moment. She's too attractive. She won't want to talk to me. She's looking at him. All of this stuff. And it's not chosen. I don't choose what goes through my head. I don't think anyone does. There's like 2,000-ish conscious thoughts of, yeah, maybe now's the right time to go to the bathroom. Maybe. But then there's 60,000 or so other random thoughts that you don't create. It's like you don't beat your own heart. You don't digest your own food. It just happens, right? So the brain is producing all of these thoughts. Now, what people do, it's the equivalent of your car is creating exhaust fumes. And what people are doing is they're getting out of their car, checking the exhaust fumes and thinking, right, based on these exhaust fumes, shall I take a left? But really how the car worked, can you imagine if that's how people drove? The world would be chaos.
Yeah.
Really how it works is you take a left turn and the exhaust fumes come out the back. It's the same with thinking. You act in life without checking the thinking. You don't need it. It's just that it's just happening. And so this is with, when it relates to women or any other kind of confidence, your sense of self is derived from you, not external things. How many, how much money you've made? How many clients do you have? How many people said nice things about you? How many people have you slept with? How many people want to sleep with you? These things look like the illusion is very convincing. It looks like they're giving you a feeling, but it's only your subjective thinking in the moment that creates how you feel. So if you think, oh, she just winked at me, oh my God, I feel great. It's because you thought she was winking at you. But then if she's waving to the guy behind you, now suddenly you're embarrassed.
Yeah.
And it's a great example of subjective thinking in the moment creates how you feel. So relating it back to the women and confidence thing, which I've worked on a lot myself, the more and more I keep out here just talking to women, the more I see like it's got nothing to do with me. If she says yes or no, I don't have to make it about me. There was one time I said to this girl, I was like, hey, I just want to tell you, like, your ass looks crazy in that dress.
And it's always ass with you, bro. What's going on here, man?
I'm both. I like both. And, you know, this is just the context of, like, sexual fun. I wasn't looking for a relationship in these times. And, you know, she was like, wow, really? That's so rude. And I was like, oh, come on. I know you enjoyed it. She's like, yeah, I did.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, yeah. It's playful. Playful. I'm not trying to be rude.
Man, listen, you're a pimp and you're just an undercover pimp. You're a PIMP in a nice way, not in the you have hoes type of way, but you're just a pimp.
Here's the other thing. I was into polyamory. I really wanted to experiment with having multiple partners. Yeah. So in the context of a relationship, my partner at the time, amazing woman, and I said to her, I don't want to do monogamy right now.
Yeah.
If you want to hang out, you know, there's going to be other women around, and I don't mean it in a rude way. This is just what I want to experiment with right now.
Yeah.
And she was cool with that, and she slept with someone else, and we talked about it the next day, not and then why did you do it, oh my God, because I don't have the ownership thing. I just, hey, was it good? No, it was a bit shit. Really? Tell me why. And we talked about it, and it wasn't like you know, I didn't want to make it into a thing. And then she asked me, how was your date with so-and-so? Oh, yeah, it was okay. You know, this is what happened. And it's all out in the open. The only reason why I like talking about this stuff with other men is because we can free ourselves from stuff that women have been taught and that we've been taught.
True.
We don't need to play on the opposite sides of the thing. Yeah. It's like if women know, I'm not going to judge them. Like all of my friends and everyone I've slept with, they know I'm not going to judge them. I'm not going to go around telling everyone. I'm not going to show you pictures on my phone of what we did together. You'd be shocked. You'd be shocked at what women want to do with us. It's not like we have to take anything. And this is what freed me from the confidence thing. I don't need confidence. It's made up. All I need to tell Sarah is, hey, I'm on your team, chef. We're trying to do the same thing out here. We're on the same team.
I love that, man. It really makes sense. Now, I understand, like, when you said at the beginning that you demonstrate to people before you... And that this is a great demonstration, bro, because literally as you're talking, I'm thinking like, God, this guy's making real sense, bro. Like, I'm really just like, you know, when you say in your YouTube channel, the way we started it, when we said, OK, I coach people on their mindset, on their thoughts, because it's only thought that stops you from doing the things you want to do. And it's making a lot more sense to me right now. It's like, why am I overthinking shit? Just do it. Do it and just don't even think about consequences. Not like that. Not like not think about consequences. Just take it. Roll with the punches. Just do what you want to do. This, it makes sense that confidence is a marketing scheme. Mm. You know, motivation is a marketing scheme.
I don't mean to make it sound sinister.
It's not. That's the thing. It's a lot. It's freeing.
Yeah.
That's how I'm feeling right now. I'm feeling like, fuck, I can do anything. I'm going to take over the world. Yo, Steve.
So you're off to a retreat. Soon. Sell me on the idea of going on a retreat. What's that all about?
I don't know if I can sell it to you. I'm very bad at selling stuff.
All right. Round up, everybody. Now we're about to talk about the retreat. Retreat.
All right. So it's like this. Yeah. A lot of people will go, they'll say, I need a holiday. Have you ever felt like that?
That's interesting, isn't it? Because we all think of a holiday as, you know, jet to off on an aeroplane, package holiday, get out of the beach. But are you really seeing the place you're going to for a start? You're just seeing a packaged up version of that place that the tour company wants you to see. And are you really resting your mind when you go there?
Aha! Yeah,
that's exactly what the retreat is for, is resting the mind. It's giving yourself a mental vacation. I'm not going anywhere fancy. It's in Mayfield in England. I've never even heard of it.
Nice.
An hour and a half drive from here.
Local.
I don't even know. I try not to look into these things because I don't want to know what's around, because there might be, oh, there's a gym nearby.
Yeah, I think it's in Essex somewhere, isn't it?
So
you don't even want to go to the gym. You want to give yourself proper mental break.
This is going to be on aeroplane mode.
Oh.
The whole week. I'm not talking to
you. You're bringing your phone though.
Yeah, I'm going to I like music in the car.
Okay.
Yeah, there you go.
And I like to listen to music in the mornings when I'm cooking my food and all that. And there's going to be 11 other guys there. We're all living in a mansion. There's more than enough room for all of us. There's going to be deep bonding time, but not in a like forced way. It's we have a group discussion in sessions throughout the day. So there's like 3, 4, 5 hours of that kind of coaching throughout the day. And then in the evenings, cooking my food, talking to the other guys, maybe we play chess, who knows? But like, it's a way to turn off the noise and really just come back to center. And I think we don't need a retreat to be able to do that. That's why I wouldn't sell it to anyone.
Who's bringing the shrooms? No, you don't. You plead the fifth. Yo, listen though. Steve, it's getting, it's 1 hour, 15 minutes. We need
might
to wrap
take
up
it up quickly. To 2 hours because we've got a lot to talk about. No.
There's a lot. But when you come back, we want to, you're around, brother. You're local. So we can get you on the next
time. I'm local until May. Then you ain't going to see me for a while.
We'll be ready for that as well. Don't worry about that. We'll sort you out.
We'll batch some content.
Hell yeah. That's what we do, man. Ball content. It is. It really is. Yeah, and shout out to you for being that guy, you know, where you can do that shit. When you come in and, you know, just wrap up 6 videos in one sitting. Not a lot of people can do that. And that's a superpower on its own. Steve, you want to take us out with the show?
Yeah, just a big thanks for coming in. And I love that I want to just sit around a campfire with you one day and just play guitars and talk. Because you've got that sort of storytelling vibe. I think stories are really important in terms of getting messages across.
True.
They're underused in business, I think. Storytelling.
Big time, man. I think people buy stories, not services, and people buy people, not products. That's a big thing that I live by. Like, you're buying me as a coach, and the stories are like a part of that. And anyone who has a business, I think, like, what's the story?
Yeah.
You know, like, the story is really what hooks me. Like, my mom hates Mortal Kombat before I started talking to her about it. And now she asked me the other day, is there a new Mortal Kombat movie?
Yeah, 12 is coming. It's coming, auntie. Don't worry, man. We're all waiting. We're all waiting to see what happens after Liu Kang became the Thunder and Fire God. Listen, we have this final segment. You see a fishbowl in front of you with many different questions in there. So give it a little shake and pick up 3 and answer the questions. They're very friendly questions.
Is this COVID secure?
Very COVID secure. Don't worry. Don't worry. We got you.
Sorry,
man.
I couldn't resist.
All right. First question.
Favorite location to visit?
There you go.
What's my favorite location to visit?
LML, of course.
What a plug.
You know what? I'm not even gonna lie. Since I met Sammy, really, like, I was thinking about it for a second, and that is true. You know, when I come here, you should see me on the ride over here. I'm pumped. I couldn't be more excited if I tried.
Yes, sir. I appreciate that. Hell yeah, that's the clip that we're gonna be using. That's the promo clip right there, ladies and gentlemen.
When I come here, it's like I'm coming to create. You know, it's a big deal to me. Like when I make music at home or when I rap or like whatever, like I love the atmosphere. And when I come here, I feel like anything's possible. So thank you.
Amazing. Thank you so much. That's so kind of you, bro. I appreciate it. And I enjoy every time you're coming. I really enjoy it because I know we're going to create some stunning content, and I also edit your stuff. So it's really enjoyable. I learn from every video. No joke. Let's go. Question number 2.
If your house caught fire, excluding family members, what's the first thing you'd rescue? Okay, so dogs are family members.
Yeah.
Okay. First thing I'd rescue. I want to be silly and say my Mortal Kombat t-shirt that I'm wearing right now, but generally, I don't know. Nothing's really that important. I'm not running into the house to put my life in danger to save something. My laptop, maybe, but everything's backed up anyway. PlayStation, yeah, I don't care. Whatever, man. It's just things. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, but let's keep it to the Mortal Kombat t-shirt because shit looks good.
I would definitely... This is like a silly thing for me to say, but like this is one of the t-shirts that means... Oh, this is one of the items I own that means more to me than like you couldn't pay me 50 grand to give this to you.
Wow. It's a sick t-shirt. When did you get it?
So when I was in Mexico, I was looking around. I went to this place. They sell lots of anime like type merch.
Yeah.
And I bought a bunch of things and I was looking for Mortal Kombat stuff. And the stuff they had wasn't really my taste. And then I went into the basement where they're selling lots of t-shirts. And there was a guy there. He was like, he had this massive stick with a hook on the end. And he was like taking the t-shirts off the top rail. And just caught my eye. I was about to walk out. And I saw him hook something off, and it caught my eye. And the thing that he took off first showed me the Mortal Kombat t-shirt, like five pieces behind it.
Jeez.
And I ran over there. I was like, listen, how much is the t-shirt? It was only like £12 or something like that. I was like, give me six of them. He's like, I've only got one. I said to him, what am I going to do with one? He's like, why do you want six? Like, for gifts, duh. He's like, no, I've got one. And then he looked through, bless his heart, he looked through all of the whole railing to see what other Mortal Kombat stuff he had. He didn't have anything else.
Man, that sounds like a movie for real. Like, you got revealed. And then you see it close up to your expression. Amazing. Third and final question, my friend. Let's go.
Describe Earth 50 years from now.
Yes, this is very good. Very good. You know what? Yeah, before you say anything, this is... Before coming here, I was watching Russell Brand's channel. Russell Brand is an amazing channel, bro. And he was talking about the metaverse and Facebook. That's all I'm going to say. Off to you, bro.
Interesting. 50 years from now, I mean, I'll be what? 79.
Jeez, you're gonna be one of those big gurus in a mountain somewhere with a temple and people coming to you, and you'll have like 50 different chains and you'll be in a robe and just people looking at you, and you're just walking like this, and you like leading meditation seminars and shit.
I do enjoy a good robe, I'm not gonna lie. They're very comfortable. I'm honestly, for men, I think they're brilliant. They're really comfortable.
There's a lot of freedom, you know what I mean? It's like one of those Japanese spas, you know what I mean? Come on out. Like, you know, that's one of my favorite types. Like, when I'm watching Naruto episode and then they put filler episodes and they're in the fucking spa and chatting shit, I'm like, that looks so peaceful.
I'm not allowed in Japanese spas because I have tattoos. How lame is that? I have to go to the Yakuza ones and I don't want to go there.
What's wrong with this gaijin over here?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm thinking 50 years from now, if you've got any sense, your avatar will be in those caves selling your guru message. You'll be sitting there with your feet up. Just send your avatars out.
You know, I'll be honest with you, in 50 years, so I'll be 79. I mean, I probably won't be coaching, but knowing me, I probably will. So I probably have one or two clients a week, and they come and we do extraordinary things together. So
yeah, like, but it's like half a mil a year client.
Maybe, or maybe it'll be pro bono at that point. I have no idea. But yeah, what I love is being with people, you know, like spending a whole week with someone where you don't pay me for a coaching session. You know, come here for like a week or a month. We're going to cook together. We're going to eat together. We're going to fish together. We're gonna whatever. I don't fish, but
yeah,
we're going to do stuff together. We're going to, you know, it's going to be a bonding experience that technology can't give us. Because at one point, I don't want to be using this stuff. Now, there's nothing wrong with it. It's just the real connection to me is with looking in someone's eyes.
Right.
You know, like not in a weird way. Like
Yeah. Yo, bro, what's going on?
Just like, in 50, what would the Earth look like? Well, that's what my world would look like. The Earth, I think we're heading in an interesting direction. I'm not too sure about the metaverse thing. I'm not really into looking into it because the more I look into it, the more distracted I'm going to get. Mm-hmm. However, from what I can see, they're moving in the way of, what's that Minority Report movie and iRobot and all of that kind of stuff. And it can be destructive for humanity. But the destruction of humanity requires our cooperation and our participation in it. We can't destroy things like the forest unless we participate in it, just like we can't destroy ourselves without us actively participating in it. So Zuckerberg and all the other people, they might be making this stuff, and that's cool. But it's up to us to use it as a responsible tool. So 50 years from now, the people who are using this tool irresponsibly will be slaves. The people who are using the tools responsibly, they probably won't. I don't know. Though. Like, I feel like the world becomes more and more segregated and divided the more we use things irresponsibly.
Right.
So like cars, for example, you got two types of drivers, responsible, irresponsible. You know, there's just an example of being segregated by a tool.
Yeah.
You got Instagram, people who have what my friend calls tech neck, which is this.
Oh, yeah.
You see the arch, yeah?
Yeah, he's always... Tech neck, I love that.
Tech neck.
I love that term.
It's like you got people who are doing this, yeah. Tech neck, and you got people like me when I use my phone and try and do this as much as possible.
So you can keep it in the right way.
You know, like that's being irresponsible with the technology. I don't want to put that on me.
Yeah.
And also, like in 50 years' time, I do think that the future generations, I've already seen it. I spoke to a 14-year-old and she was like, ugh, you're still using Instagram. I was like, yeah, I don't like TikTok. She's like, ugh, you're still using phones. I'm like, what? She pulls out a Motorola flip phone, you know, Hello Moto.
Yeah.
And she's like, my mom calls me on this. That's why I'm cool. And I was like, damn.
Yeah, they're on a different level. They grew up with this shit. They woke up in a world where when they were 2-3 years old, so people put something in their face and they started, that's it. I feel like the 90s babies are one of the only generations that grew up just with TV at home inside the living room if it was on, you know. But most of our time we spent outside, we spent, you know, creativity. I remember, bro, when I was like in first grade, like year one, I remember I used to create these stories and grab all of my friends and tell them these fake stories just so we can go on an adventure. I used to make stories like, oh, you know, behind that mountain there is the forest of the blah blah blah, and there is this golden eagle that will tell us where to go, like shit like that. Literally, I remember I was at home and I found a copper necklace thing, right? And I was told my mom, what is this? She's like, whatever, that's not it. I literally went to my friends the next day. I have the golden card to access the golden city. Let's go. You know, shit like that. People right now don't do that. Kids right now don't do that. They don't have that.
They got their own version of it. So like this, again, in 50 years time, like the avatar thing, they might be interacting with something that they've built on an iPad, press a button and it comes up with a hologram or a 3D printed version of whoever they're playing with, you know, and they've got complete control on the iPad or whatever.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, this is what I'm saying, responsible and irresponsible use of these tools.
Yeah.
If I operate a power drill, it's like psychedelics as well, man. Mm. If I operate these things without learning the manual, then I'm going to get hurt.
Yeah.
The same thing with the Mark Zuckerberg thing. And like he's talking about, I want to create an experience where I'm sitting in the same room as you, but I'm actually in Florida. You know, like, it's
how you use it.
Definitely. I hope that we don't leave some sectors of society behind when we're doing these worlds, metaverses and things. There's obviously millions of older people who can't access that tech, and third world who also can't access that tech. We're dividing the world in some respects, but... Yeah, I'm with you. I think we should be out in the real world meeting real people as much as possible.
I think our souls need that, whether you believe in a soul or not. Our soul need that. There's a connection that we need. But let's leave it at that. Sachin, I think you...
you could be here all day, otherwise.
Yeah, exactly. I think you smashed it, bro, in terms of like really... I believe, man. I believe in Sachin, bro.
I got the second cult follower.
Yeah, I believe. Tell me, Sensei, what do we do next? Where are we going to build our temple to worship the owl god, Moloch? Apparently, that's what happened in Bohemian Grove, if you're into conspiracy theories. Shout out, Alex Jones. Anyways, let's leave it at that. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for listening to us. We've taken 1 hour, 25 minutes of your time. We appreciate you for sticking around. I've been Sammy. I've been here with my co-host, Mr. Steve Parker.
Thank you. Thanks for watching.
And our beautiful guest, Mr. Sachin Sharma. Hey, Sachin, before we go, where do we find you?
At Sachin's Insights on Instagram. It's the easiest way to get hold of me.
There it is. It's in the description. Once again, thank you so much, guys, and we'll see you on the next one. Peace and love.